the Minister of Justice wants to prosecute him because of the way in which my Yanomami people have been mistreated, and they have allowed disease to come in. They've allowed us to die. They've allowed 577 of our children to die. So you, or the role of the Minister of Justice, that's who decides. I'm not going to decide, because the crime that he created against my Yanomami people, well, it's the federal constitution that says that it is criminal to carry out genocide. So he could go to jail so that he could learn to respect my people, so he could learn to respect the cultural heritage of my people and of all Brazil.
Davi Kopanawa Yanomami, leader and shaman for the Yanomami people, one of the largest indigenous tribes in Brazil. He won the Right Livelihood Award in 2019 with the Hutucara Yanomami Association. We spoke to him last Thursday, just as Brazilian President Lula was coming to Washington to meet with President Biden. The meeting came just over a month after supporters of Brazil's former president, far-right Jair Bolsonaro, attempted a coup by violently attacking the Supreme Court and the Brazilian Congress in Brazil's capital, Brasilia. This week, Bolsonaro announced plans to return to Brazil in March to lead the opposition. He's been living in Florida since December. We'll be posting our full interview with Davi Kopanawa Yanomami in Portuguese next week. Happy birthday to Neil Shabata. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts OB Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, gunshot detection firm ShotSpotter is under investigation by the Portland City Auditor for unreported lobbying.
A record number of teens report sadness and violence in a new CDC survey.
And in national news, court documents show Fox News hosts did not believe the 2020 election was stolen.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 17th, 2023. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Ashley Mackey. The gunshot detection ShotSpotter is under investigation by the Portland City Auditor for possibly violating city lobbying code. ShotSpotter is a company that places microphones around cities that they say detect gunshots and dispatch police officers to the area. The company has been courting the Portland Police, a civilian oversight group, and Portland Commissioner for 15 months now. Those efforts and overtures may violate city code about lobbying. If any person or organization spends more than $1,000 or 8 hours per quarter on influencing city officials and policy, they have to register as a lobbying group. Text messages go back to November 2021 between ShotSpotter sales reps and police bureau leaders. Those reps provided city leaders with talking points to push back on criticism of their program. They also helped arrange for police bureau reps to meet with Tampa police to see how they use ShotSpotter. If they spent more than $1,000 in a span of 3 months or more than 8 hours, they could be in violation of the lobbying code. The city auditor can impose a civil penalty on groups that violate the code, including a fine up to $3,000 per violation.
Portland had been on track to offer a direct contract to ShotSpotter, but pushback led to an open bid process last month. Officials are still deciding which company to go with. Four are known to have applied. ShotSpotter has been criticized in recent years by other cities that use their service and by independent researchers. They claim a 97% accuracy rate of identifying gunshots. But a study of the MacArthur Justice Center looked at nearly 2 years of data in Chicago and found 89% of ShotSpotter alerts did not find a gun-related crime. The Chicago Inspector General looked at 42,000 ShotSpotter calls that police responded to, and only 9% included a gun-related crime. ShotSpotter has said these studies were designed badly, or showed that police were using the technology wrong. Advocates have also raised concerns with adding the microphone technology to Portland in the wake of rising gun violence. They worry about added surveillance, especially on BIPOC Portlanders. The bids are in front of a selection committee who are expected to make a choice by the end of the month. From there, the city will negotiate a contract, and installation of the microphones could start as soon as April 1st.
A record 193 houseless people died in Multnomah County in 2021. That represents a 53% increase compared to the year before. Substances contributed to about 60% of those deaths, mirroring trends across the country. This is according to a report called Domicile Unknown, compiled by Multnomah County and Street Roots. Lead County Health Officer Dr. Jennifer Vines was among those announcing the findings.
This is a report with incredibly high quality data. Our medical examiners are literally boots on the ground, talking to families, gathering detailed information. We have reviewers who cross-check references to homelessness to make sure we are in fact looking at homeless deaths. And then we have fairly good reliability around markers like race and ethnicity, and certainly cause and manner of death. There's a relatively small group of people that assemble this data from start to finish. I will acknowledge that it's not ideal to be in 2023 and talking about events from 2021, but I'm glad we're doing it, and I'm glad to be here to look at this report with you all today. Just a reminder that medical examiner deaths are very specific in terms of what deaths fall under the medical examiner's jurisdiction. So they tend to be non-natural deaths. So things like accidents, questions around overdose, certainly homicide and suicide. So they tend to skew younger and more violent. They tend to be non-natural deaths. So I offer that as a really important reminder that this is not the entire universe of deaths among people experiencing homelessness. This is one very high quality set of information, but that is skewed in a certain way because of the nature of the medical examiner's jurisdiction. I also want to acknowledge that part of the timing with this report has to do with just the sheer number of cases that our medical examiners investigate day in and day out. They are 24/7, 365. So high quality data, beautiful humanizing stories in this report. I also just want to point out that we talk about these deaths in absolute numbers. So we all want a denominator, right? We all want to know this year compared to last year, what proportion is what. And we can't do that with this data, unfortunately, because of its nature. So these are absolute numbers that we can look at year over year, but they essentially speak for themselves. And we can talk certainly about trends and numbers, but we can't do the kind of quantitative analysis of these numbers because of the nature of the information itself. So let's move to talk a little bit more about context for the year of 2021, which this report covers. So if you take yourself back to that time, we started the year, calendar year 2021, with a vaccine rollout. So COVID-19 vaccine was just coming out. By later that year, summer, we were looking at the Delta variant and the Delta surge that unfolded in late summer, early fall. And just when we thought we were maybe out of the woods, we had the Omicron variant right around December of that year. That year also saw in June the climate emergency of the heat dome, which is visible in this report if you look at hyperthermia deaths or heat deaths from overheating. It was also the year that spring that we issued our first public alert around fentanyl. And I want to highlight that because for a long time, we imagined that fentanyl was sort of a drug contaminant that people would kind of stumble upon accidentally, and it would be something that might move through the drug supply and create a spike in overdose that we would try to be alert to and respond to. What we weren't prepared for was simply just the use of fentanyl as a drug that became cheap, that became highly available, and that is so potent and short-acting that people actually develop an addiction and seek out the drug itself, even though it carries such high risk of overdose. So that was our first sort of public alert. And now, you know, we are well into that crisis and looking at ways to address that crisis, certainly among people experiencing homelessness, but also more broadly. Finally, I just want to offer some comments about the findings in this report. I'm really, really sad to say that I'm not surprised by the findings in this report. They mirror larger county trends in terms of violent deaths and certainly overdose. I think what's particularly difficult about this report is that we see those trends concentrated among our most vulnerable. So people who literally do not have shelter, experiencing some of the worst of cascading social effects of the COVID-19 pandemic are really on full display here.
That was Dr. Jennifer Vines, Multnomah County's lead health officer, speaking about a recent report showing 193 houseless people died in Multnomah County in 2021.
Teens, especially girls, are experiencing record high levels of sadness and violence. That's according to a new youth risk behavior survey from the CDC. Edwin J. Vieira speaks with a child psychiatrist to learn more about this troubling trend.
The latest report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds teen girls are experiencing record high levels of sadness and violence. The report says 57% of teen girls in the U.S. said they felt sad or hopeless in 2021. The percentage is about twice that of boys and represents around a 60% increase from a decade earlier. The number of teen girls experiencing sexual violence also rose 20% between 2017 and 2021. Dr. Asha Patton-Smith, a Virginia child psychiatrist, says the pandemic exacerbated what were already ongoing problems.
The isolation and stress from the pandemic really took a toll on mental health. This led to increased depression, increased anxiety, rise in domestic violence. And so it really just showed that long-term impact of trauma increases depression, anxiety, and other mental health conditions.
In order to reverse this trend in individual households, Patton-Smith says parents need to check in often with their kids and have open and honest conversations to ensure they feel like they belong and can share their thoughts. She knows one misconception is that if a child is isolated, moody, or sullen, it's just teenage angst. She warns if it's persistent and teens aren't doing things to take care of themselves, it could be the sign of something distressing. Aside from the pandemic, doctors feel numerous factors have contributed to young people's mental health declines. Pediatrician Christina Brown finds the growth of social media, online games, and smartphones are factors as well. She cautions kids and teens to look beyond their screens as a way to help maintain good mental health.
Finding things that bring them joy, getting out into the world, into nature, doing service projects, seeing the bigger picture, not just what's right in front of them in their high school world.
Brown adds families should not hesitate to reach out to guidance counselors, pediatricians, and teachers if they have concerns about a teen's mental health. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, Virginia News Connection.
Text messages between popular Fox News hosts have been revealed in a defamation lawsuit showing they did not believe Trump's election fraud claims. It's all part of the lawsuit Dominion Voter Systems has brought against Fox News. They claim that Fox knowingly defamed them and their product with election fraud lies. Dominion is seeking $1.5 billion in damages. Tucker Carlson wrote to his colleagues that attorney Sidney Powell was lying about the election fraud. Laura Ingraham wrote back saying that Powell was, quote, a complete nut. No one will work with her. Ditto with Rudy, in reference to Rudy Giuliani. Sean Hannity said in a deposition, quote, that whole narrative that Sidney was pushing, I did not believe it for one second, end quote. Rupert Murdoch, the owner of the Fox Corporation, called Trump's voter fraud claims really crazy stuff. Fox claims that they were covering something newsworthy, not supporting the claim that the election was stolen. Observers say that defamation cases are hard to prove because of First Amendment free speech rights, but Dominion's case against Fox is stronger than most. Part of the issue stems from a drop in Fox's ratings after election night, when they were the first news outlet to call Arizona for Joe Biden, effectively calling the election for him. Fox's managing editor in Washington, Bill Salmon, is quoted in the case saying, "It's remarkable how weak ratings make good journalists do bad things."
Labor Secretary Marty Walsh returns to his union roots with the NHL. And a special grand jury believes at least one witness lied in testimony regarding efforts to reverse former President Donald Trump's 2020 loss in Georgia. With these stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Across every single industry and every single community, working people are certainly the heart and soul of our nation. And when the workers stand united, nothing can stop us.
Labor Secretary Marty Walsh has long been a champion of the American union worker. He'll return to his union roots next month to lead the National Hockey League Players Association. Walsh was charged with helping President Joe Biden create the most pro-union presidency in history by frequently meeting with unions, including striking workers, and played a key role in helping avert a national rail strike last year. A January 2021 phone call between then-President Donald Trump and election officials in Georgia encouraging them to find votes set off a two-year investigation.
So what are we going to do here, folks? I only need 11,000 votes. Fellas, I need 11,000 votes. Give me a break.
Now a special grand jury convened in the investigation says one or more witnesses may have committed perjury and encourages local prosecutors to seek indictments. Key details on who may have lied were not revealed in the grand jury's report, although Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani, Senator Lindsey Graham, and Georgia's top election officials did testify. California Attorney General Rob Bonta and other Democratic state attorneys general are urging CVS and Walgreens to continue with plans to offer abortion medications in retail pharmacies despite threats of legal retaliation from GOP-led states.
The Dobbs decision left millions of Americans defenseless against an onslaught of draconian state and federal regulations.
20 Republican state attorneys general have warned the retail pharmacies that plans to distribute abortion pills through the mail are both unsafe and illegal. President Biden has signed an executive order mandating the federal government do more to address racial inequality.
We have an obligation to make sure all people are safe. Public safety depends on public trust, as all of us know. But too often that trust is violated.
At his recent State of the Union address, Biden welcomed the parents of Tyree Nichols, the black man killed by five police officers in Memphis last month. Biden says agencies will now conduct annual reviews of their equity action plans and work to better engage with communities facing systemic racism.
As we act, let us not become the evil that we deplore.
Congresswoman Barbara Lee stood alone in casting a vote against giving then-President George W. Bush a blank check to wage war following the 9/11 attacks. Now Lee joins a growing field of politicians hoping to replace California Senator Dianne Feinstein when she retires in 2024. Lee says the Senate is sorely lacking the presence of people of color, black women in particular. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's KBOO's Black History and Futures Month series. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy and cold with an overnight low of 39 degrees. Tomorrow has a chance of rain with a daytime high of 47. Today in history, in 1963, Michael Jordan was born. Jordan is known as the greatest basketball player of all time, playing 15 seasons in the NBA, becoming a global icon in the process. The quote of the day is from Jordan, who said, "The minute you get away from fundamentals, whether it's proper technique, work ethic, or mental preparation, the bottom can fall out of your game, your schoolwork, your job, whatever you're doing."
The pattern of deaths among indigenous climate activists in Honduras is concerning human rights groups. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. International human rights groups are concerned about growing violence against indigenous environmental defenders in Honduras, where four killings have taken place since the start of this year. Many people are comparing the wave of killings of indigenous environmental activists to the infamous 2016 assassination of Goldman Environmental Prize winner Berta Cáceres. Maria Martin reports.
On the Caribbean coast, members of Honduras' Garifuna ethnic community of Black and Indigenous origin say it's strange that rights activist Ricardo Arnaul Montero was declared drowned with no autopsy. Montero had been receiving death threats related to a long-running land dispute in his Triunfo de la Cruz community. The incident comes on the heels of the killings of other indigenous Honduran environmental activists, like Ali Dominguez and Jairo Bonilla, who'd founded the Huapinol Water Defenders Movement, which fought against river contamination by a controversial open-pit iron oxide mine. They were killed in January in broad daylight. Police say they died in a robbery attempt, but their families are pressuring the government of President Xiomara Castro for an independent investigation.
Son las mismas autoridades que los han criminalizado.
Supporters like attorney Yolanda González say local authorities have criminalized these environmental defenders for too long to be objective. González says one of President Xiomara Castro's promises when she took office a year ago was to defend Honduras's highly at-risk environmental activists.
No han hecho nada.
But so far, she says, there's little political will and nothing's been done. For National Native News in Guatemala, I'm Maria Martin.
The Department of the Interior recently announced additional Biden administration appointees to join the agency, including Lynn Trujillo, who will serve as senior counselor to Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland. Trujillo is from Sandia Pueblo and most recently served as cabinet secretary for New Mexico's Department of Indian Affairs. Shortly after taking her position as cabinet secretary in 2019, Trujillo talked about the importance of Native women in leadership roles and her work with then-Congresswoman Haaland.
I hope that we inspire other women to, envision themselves in these roles. Would have never foreseen myself in this position, but I'm here now, and I know that all my life experiences in terms of my career, but also who I am as a Pueblo woman, has prepared me for this.
As Indian Affairs Cabinet Secretary, Trujillo worked closely with tribes during the COVID-19 pandemic. She also made it a priority to address missing and murdered Indigenous people, which included working closely with a task force and focused on Native youth issues with an Indigenous Youth Council. Secretary Deb Haaland is also a Pueblo woman from Laguna who made history becoming the first Native American cabinet secretary of the Interior and as a Native American woman elected to Congress. The Biden administration's newly created job of Arctic ambassador goes to an Alaskan, Michael Sfregra, who currently chairs the U.S. Arctic Research Commission, a Biden appointment in 2021. He's considered an expert on Arctic geography and policy and has been a longtime advocate of the use of indigenous knowledge. He served in a number of national leadership roles that involve the Arctic and helped establish the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington, D.C., and was also a vice chancellor at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The ball is in the Environmental Protection Agency's court when it comes to stricter oil and gas rules on public lands. Citizens and environmental groups from around the country weighed in on how far these new regulations will go. Roz Brown reports from New Mexico.
Citizens, states, and environmental groups from New Mexico and across the U.S. have weighed in on tougher rules to govern pollution from the oil and gas industry and now await a final plan from the Environmental Protection Agency. Oil and gas operators waste over $500 million worth of gas on public lands every year, according to a report by the Environmental Defense Fund and Taxpayers for Common Sense. Autumn Hanna with the Taxpayers Group says almost 300 advocates in 33 states and 110 organizations testified in support of stronger methane rules.
We have an opportunity to update the rules that govern federal oil and gas operations, and we can strengthen those rules so that we can capture that gas without these wasteful practices.
The EPA released its proposed supplemental rule for methane last November. It garnered significant support as an improvement over the original 2021 draft, but many have urged the agency to impose greater limits on flaring, the burning of natural gas associated with oil extraction. In New Mexico, Paige Knight with Voices for Children says communities, children, classrooms, and the state's economy all would benefit from the millions in revenue lost each year due to flaring.
Those wasted resources, they don't only impact our ability to invest in our people and places, but it impacts the health and well-being of our children and our climate. We know that wasted gas releases harmful, toxic pollutants into the air we breathe.
Hannah says without stronger rules, consumers will continue to lose out.
We're losing because this is valuable natural gas that's not getting to market. Instead, it's being wasted through practices like routine venting and flaring. And the other way that we're all losing is that this gas is not being charged a royalty. We're not getting the revenues from that royalty.
This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
Environmental groups in Illinois are pressuring state and federal regulatory agencies to step it up when it comes to chemical plants. This comes after a major toxic explosion at a chemical company in LaSalle. They say state and federal officials didn't do enough to enforce regulations. Mark Richardson reports.
Environmental groups in Illinois are pushing state and federal officials to tighten regulations on businesses that use toxic substances after a fire and explosion last month in north central Illinois. A January 11th fire and explosion at a chemical plant in LaSalle spewed a cloud of toxic particles across the area. The city of 10,000 was covered with pink dust that contained sulfuric acid, lead, and mercury. Hannah Lee Flath with the Sierra Club Illinois chapter says it was clear that the federal EPA and its Illinois counterpart did not properly enforce existing regulations and that local officials didn't have an adequate disaster plan.
Wind and weather can carry ash and smoke widely, and so folks closest to the plant are certainly more impacted immediately, but we saw that pink material was landing on the Illinois River, and so it's very clear that it did travel.
Flath sees eerie similarities between the LaSalle disaster and a recent incident in East Palestine, Ohio, where 20 derailed tanker cars burned and spread vinyl chloride and other toxins across the area. The EPA and Caris Chemical Company did not respond by deadline to a request for comment. Flath says what happened in Illinois and Ohio are not isolated events, and both communities face long-term dangers from the toxic substances. Studies show that a chemical disaster occurs on average every 3 days in the United States, and often in less than affluent neighborhoods.
These types of facilities are more frequently located in black and brown communities, lower-income communities that are already overburdened. Oftentimes, these types of plants are in locations that are already struggling because of other environmental issues and pollution.
Flath adds the Sierra Club and other environmental groups are working with the EPA and other agencies to develop proactive plans to protect communities before and during chemical leaks.
We're partnering with environmental justice organizations and other groups who work on toxics issues to urge the EPA and the Biden administration to make sure preventive measures are taken to try to ensure these disasters don't happen in the first place.
For Illinois News Connection, I'm Mark Richardson.
One Bay Area nonprofit is bringing lessons about global warming and indigenous approaches to schools. The Mycelium Youth Network aims to empower young people about climate change. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 2017, intense wildfires burned near Oakland, California.
And I remember distinctly young students coming out of classrooms with nosebleeds or complaining about headaches from the smoke.
That's Lil Milagro Enriquez. At the time, she worked at an elementary school primarily serving Black and Latino children, whose communities often suffer disproportionately during fires and other disasters.
I asked them what they thought about what was happening. And what they responded was that they were really terrified about climate change and that no one was talking to them about it. And the fact that no one was talking to them about it is what made it so scary.
So to help young people feel more knowledgeable and less afraid, Enriquez created the Mycelium Youth Network. The nonprofit sends educators to Bay Area schools. They conduct lessons about the impacts of global warming and ways to adapt. And they discuss indigenous traditions and approaches to caring for the earth, which she says can help young people feel more connected to solutions.
I think the point of education should really be, how are we actively preparing young people and empowering young people for the world that they will inherit, and give them excitement and hope for what that can look like.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Friday, February 17th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories, curiosities, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Annette Newell. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Mark Richardson, Roz Brown, Catherine Carley, Edwin J. Vieira, and Dr. Anthony Lizovitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Ashley Mackey. All of our KABU programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kabu.fm/give or text KABU to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines.